Three lessons. Number one, the nightjar and the private investigator. A nightjar sounds, at night, like a typewriter. A nightjar sounds, at night, like a typewriter. Here, it is pertinent to say that the crepuscular bird's churring song, rising and falling with a ventriloquial quality, recalls the mechanical and insistent sound of a typewriter. The repeat spacer is held down, running through blank spaces until the end of the line. A private investigator, too, sounds at night like a typewriter, when he cannot be seen working inside his small, shabby office. A private investigator sounds at night like a typewriter. The typewriter has been given to both the nightjar and the private investigator as a commonality, as a voice sounding in the dark. An enforced similitude, and embedded in this similitude, a space of ambiguity, of obscurity. The nightjar and the private investigator are indistinguishable. In a forest, in an office, on a lonely night. But the conditions of this gift of voice are different in each case. The nightjar sits on the grounds of resemblance. His mechanical song sounds like a mechanical instrument. The nightjar bears his path to similitude declaratively. As resembler he is to the typewriter, so resembler he is to the private investigator. While what is perceived as inalienable voice is only the sound workings of a material tool, between the private investigator and speaking. It is dark and we are outside. The typewriter becomes his very being there, his voice at that moment. A perceptual inadequacy is a blind approach to similitude. Why fix on him at all except, he asks, about the sentience of obscurity, forced in arrangement? How is an obscurity created? And, via this question, what is an obscurity? What is an obscurity made from? Number 2. Twin whisks. She always stood on TV so that the pointed cups of her breasts and the bulging ray gun were in profile. Her nose a neat snub echo, and her buttocks in the tight suit, pert and contrary. Ella was winding the rotating twin whisks on Samantha's back, turning the little handle faster and faster as they watched the show, glued to it. Samantha flicked her ponytail frontwards over her chest. It hung long and loose and glossy in the dim light radiating from the set. "Touch it," Ella yelled and whizzed the whisks, projecting now from just under her fly button. "Shove over," Samantha said, and pushed the whirring metallic phallus and Ella over to the other side of the sofa. "When do we get to do it?" Ella groaned listlessly, flicking the digestive biscuits on the coffee table with her red painted toenails, slung between the two pieces of furniture like a particularly low slung and listless orangutan. "It hasn't started yet," Samantha said edgily, and tucked her feet up under her. Any object could become a ray gun. There wasn't a strictly necessary resemblance. The strangest things developed a bulging, bulbous, phallic association. "This bird will learn to sing," Ella had shouted, grabbing the ornamental china bird from the dusty mantel, holding it erect with two hands and spraying the room with a jet of spunk bullets from the hips. Playing in the moonlight, they formed a snatched tableau vivant of dancing nymphs, leaping high and gliding low. A dense tapestry of bright limbs, the echo trail of a sparkler. The arm of a tree upheld her arm in flight. The call of a blackbird let rip a jet of laser. Chook, chook, chook. It sliced through matter with the same surgical precision as the bright moonlight rendering crisply each leaf. Chook, chook, chook. The birdbath caught in her crosshairs for an instant, leapt wonderfully with fleeing diamond droplets. The trembling bushes spilled moisture onto her bare breasts. The arm of a tree was still raised in menacing suspense as she dropped and stalked. Her nipples were blue, framed by wintry sprigs with berries of red. Her long hair swayed as branches absently swept the gravel path. The moonlight retreated as she advanced. The hand of another was polishing a weapon. The hand of another was wrought in silver light. The hand of another was taking aim. The body achieved the heights of pirouette while spiraling down. The arms sunk backwards, the trunk collapsed, the fingers twitched on the gravel, the feet trembled, the eyelids fluttered and fell open, and all was still. The victor slunk from her hollow hide. The victor made for the victim's body. The victor took one last glance backwards crouching on the gravel path. The victor leapt with fiendish appetite and licked and lapped and devoured the victim's body. The victim trembled, the victim awoke, the victim screamed and the victim cried. The victim groaned and the victim wailed. The victor chewed and the victor spat. The victim's muddy head got caught on a twig in the grass, and the victor loped off slowly. Number 3. What are these pearls? His eyes are now pearls. His eyes shine out like pearls. His eyes reflect pearls. His eyes are pearly simulations. Pearls, these are eyes that I call them. In his eyes, we can see the singular lustre of pearls. When pearls shine, eyes shine similarly. When eyes are glossed in milky moonlight, they do appear as pearls. A pearl with a peerless surface, smooth and gentle, it does have its resembler in the eye of a man. When I say eyes, my meaning is of these pearly things which captivate with their superfluous glitter. Where there is similitude, there is poetry. Pearls are eyes. And think, what pearls would see as eyes? Dead eyes, I'd rather pearls. Wherever I call up eyes, you must have in place pearls. His eyes outreach themselves as rich jewels. In the sockets remains nothing of the former matter but a gluey substance now hardened. They are blind and waterlogged. I say it to you gently. Those, oh, they are some stony objects in the place of some sense. Round things, usually strung, and but two left. That's the pity. Don't these things, glinting, bring to mind something of sentience behind, now being lost? There is always a quality to match against another. Here it is the shine drawn to prominence, and speaking shines up clear as day. These round and discreet things that have no resting place in the skull, but roll about, collecting their illusions. As they shimmer, they invite that change into something stranger. Richer. And what looks back glistens, profoundly dead. And what looks back jumps with a spark that still recalls life. Those are pearls that were his eyes.